Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hello and welcome to Clicker, I Barely Know Her.
Sorry. It's our own title, I laughed at it. Hello, yeah. Thank you for welcoming me in.
Yes, my name's Ben Vanell, I'm joined by Adam Knox.
Hello, I sarcastically laughed.
And Tommy Dasilo.
I did not laugh at all. I find that sort of humour to be a little droll, quite frankly. I was in St Kilda the other night with some friends and they were talking about the Australian TV series The Secret Life of Us.
Yes.
And I was telling them that we were going to do this Last of Us recap podcast and that one of the potential titles for it was The Secret Last of Us.
Yep.
And this group of all women went, oh, that's a great title. What did you end up calling it? And I said, Clicker, I Barely Know Her. And they said, is it too late to change it? And I said, I believe it is.
I'm going to throw you off that rooftop from in St. Kilda from The Secret Life of Us.
I also saw, so obviously if you don't know us and you've stumbled across this because you're a fan of the show, we are three comedians. We've done a bunch of stuff together, including podcasts, one of which is called Filthy Casuals, a video games show, one of which is called Aria Talking to Me, a Game of Thrones show.
This is a merging of the two,
that's
baby.
That's right. That's right. All three of us crossing over. Yes, Aria Talking to Me, funny name. Clicker, I Barely Know Her, also pretty funny.
Hopefully, if this is your first time, let's lay down some little rules here for what you can expect from this, because of it being coming from like a video games podcast, that's part of what made us interested in The Last of Us, because it's an adaptation of a game. But the way we're going to do this is by talking just about the show with no spoilers, because from this first episode, we think it's probably following the plot of the game fairly closely. So we're not going to spoil anything that we might know about in the main section. And then right at the end, with lots of warning and markers and everything,
yes,
we'll do a little spoilery part for people who maybe have played the game and want that, a little sealed section. But if you're just listening to this and just watching the show and don't want to be spoiled, you won't be for the majority of this podcast. We will warn you very clearly at the end if we're going to say anything that you won't know from the show.
Yep. And not only, you know, if you haven't played the games, not only will you not be spoiled, you won't have us bringing up stuff that is completely disinteresting to you.
Like, right.
That little picture of Crash Bandicoot in the background of that scene, that's a reference to the video game Crash Bandicoot.
The graphics in this show are really good.
You don't have to, if you're a cool person, you don't have to feel tainted by the nerd shit that we will talk about at the very end.
As long as nobody overhears you listening to this podcast, in which case, cool credentials, which I'm sure they hand out printed laminated cards if you're cool.
Yeah.
That would be a very cool thing to do. They'll be taken away from you.
That's right.
But being into prestige television, as we all know, is the coolest hobby a person can have.
Yeah. Oh, man. Ranking TV shows, as whether they're prestigious or not.
Well, like, to get away with it, we've gathered around an actual water cooler. You know, this is not a podcast. It's just a casual chat. We're recording.
Pretend like we don't know each other's last names.
Ask each other what we're having for lunch.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
I've got the reheated smell of tuna wafting through Ben's apartment here.
Oh, dear.
Well, it's all
just like a work break room.
We've all, we have all kind of just left our desks to sort of secretly go and watch this episode the minute it went up on Binge at 1 p.m. in the afternoon, Monday Australian time. And then we're sort of reconvening around the water cooler at 2:30 p.m. and sort of, you know, having to really make it look like we haven't just been bludging off for the last 90 minutes watching this bumper premiere. I wonder if all of them are going to be this long.
I've had a little sneak at like the first three on Wikipedia, just a little, you know, little detail episode bits. And I think the third one is also quite long.
Okay. Right.
I think the second one's sort of normal TV hour-ish length.
When you're in the realm of prestige TV, you can have any length. It's because it's not TV.
No.
It's Haboo. So you're why
that was a weird sneeze, Nox.
We're going to be going back and forth. Yeah, this is a long-ass episode and the fucking big budget episode.
Yeah.
This show, right off the bat, we all reckon, thankfully, was great.
Yeah,
great first step. Looks awesome.
Yeah,
really, really impressive that a TV show at this point in time can have a budget that makes it look movie quality.
Mm.
The fact that, yeah, like just the there's some big shit being pulled off, and when you're doing a setting like this where everything is in an alternate universe but then also has to be from 2003.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like that is a fucking tough thing to do for a production team.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
the realism of that, and then the realism of the more science fiction-y elements too, right, was just like, it literally looked real.
Yeah.
I was thinking as I was watching it, like, that's my observation is going to be that it looks real, but fuck, it does.
So we started off the episode with a little 1968 talk show about, and fuck, back in the day when, talk about it not being TV, back in the day you were allowed to just talk about whatever the fuck boring shit you wanted to on TV.
Yeah.
And they'd let you just make a show out of it if you wore a suit that was brown enough.
Mm.
Well, that's one thing, but also getting a studio audience to come in and sit and watch this, like, really brutal and kind of dull chat.
Right. Yes, yes.
Oh, bring
it's
it
not
back.
Meant to be entertaining, yeah. I guess.
I signed up for tickets because I thought Carl Barron was going to be on, and instead got these two eggheads talking about fungal infections.
Yeah, old Lurch and his mate, the guy from The Mummy.
Oh, that is who it is.
Yes, it's Jonathan, I think is his character in it.
Who's the host of this show?
He, I reckon, was in Buffy. I think one of the nerds from Buffy, which doesn't fucking narrow it down with the cast of Buffy. But yeah, I believe that's who that guy is. Jonathan, I think, was his character's name.
Right. I did not recognize him, but he is a smarmy little TV interviewer.
And they're having a chat about, and this is a big part of, like, so the show is set for the most part. We were in 68 here and then in 2003 for a bit. Then we go to the current year.
Yes.
And it's about, and one of the first words out of Mummy Guy's mouth is pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about not a virus, not a bacterial infection, but he's laying out his theory that a fungal infection is the biggest threat to mankind in terms of...
Right.
And they tie it in with, like, so he gives explanations of this would spread and then take over the host, and it's like a good, here's what a zombie is explanation.
Yeah, yes. Yes.
Like, it wants to keep the host alive, but
it puts hallucinogens into your brain. And
right.
And then also throws in a little, like, it wouldn't be possible now, but if the world got a little bit warmer,
then
it might be. So.
Is that, I guess that must be the explanation from The Last of Us, the game. I don't remember.
They didn't go into it as much.
Right.
Yeah. I don't think.
It's a damn good explanation, though.
It's a bit more, and like having it right up the top, I think it's odd because for a world where, you know, The Walking Dead was as popular as it was and zombies are such a well-known and waved away thing, I guess maybe to ground it and give it a bit more sort of a sense of realism, you've got the realest people in the world smoking men from the 60s.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean,
telling,
I guess,
you how it is.
If you're writing a thing, if you're making a show like this now, after the last 2 years, it would be interesting to see the version of this if the last 2 years of the pandemic hadn't have happened, right?
Right.
Like, we all have lived through a time of, like, not zombies, but this thing making a lot of people really sick and cities shutting down and everything.
Right, right. Yeah.
So it's kind of like you do have to ground it in this thing and, like, kind of remind people a little bit.
Yeah.
I thought this was well done. I did think it was a little on the nose having the 1968 TV host look into the camera and say, well, this wouldn't be an issue for me because I've been self-isolating for years. I thought that was a little... that took me out of it, honestly.
But in the world of the show, that guy was way ahead of his time with that sort of
thing. Seriously? 68? What are you been a self-isolating for?
The fucking Lenny Bruce of bad Twitter jokes. But so... yeah, you get like this explanation of they mention, you know, cordyceps and these mushroomy viruses, and then a really well-made Game of Thrones style intro where we're zooming through these cities that the Lannisters own but made of fungus this time.
Right, yeah, it's like the human body, right? Like it ends up, there's like
it looks cool. It's kind of like stop motion-y a little bit. Like forgive us because we've literally just watched this and now we're recording, so we haven't had time to look this up.
Yes.
It has to be the same studio that made both titles.
I wouldn't be so surprised. Similar. Yeah, yeah.
If every HBO show was a rule that they had to have these kinds of credits from now on?
Kirby so it's enthusiasm.
Like, just like
through,
sprawling through Hollywood.
Yeah.
It's got a great theme song. The theme song is from the game as well, but a, yep. like a redone version of it that sounded fantastic. And you end with little silhouettes of a couple of people on the horizon, which looks a bit like some characters we might meet during this television program.
Okay.
To me, Tess and a smaller version of Tess.
Goblin Boy.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Popular character from the game. We don't see him in Ep 1, but hopefully Goblin Boy makes an appearance.
Well, there was a little boy.
There was
a little boy in the show. Is that how we open?
We open with a little girl.
Oh, that's right.
In 2003.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of the opening of 2023.
We've got, three different time periods that we go through. So 1968, they explain the fungus thing that's going to be relevant very quickly.
And then those men all grow old and die, and then now we're here.
In 2003 with a young girl called Sarah and her dad called Joel, and we see, I really, so this opening section is extremely tense for a lot of it.
Yep.
And is, again, like, zombie stuff is so done. The zombie outbreak portion of most zombie things, though, of where people are starting to figure it out, makes or breaks it often, where, like, you, the reaction people have to, like, what's going on with you? Why are you foaming at the mouth? And all that stuff.
I also find these points in these kinds of, media where it's kicking off is the most interesting bit to me.
Yeah.
The, like, very early, like, people just in the city, just like we see a bit of this in a moment, but like the person in the city being like, we have to get out of here.
Yeah.
Like, go home. Like, that's the most, I always kind of want to live in that bit a little bit more.
Right.
But obviously in a movie, it's like that has to just be 3 minutes and then we cut to like a year later or whatever.
Sure.
Doing that here too.
It's the most like self-insert part where you're like, and I think, you know, the realism of the rest of this show is going to lend itself to that as well. But usually in the movies it's like, oh, okay, well, what would I do in this situation and how would I react? And I guess that is part of why it can be make or break, because it's like, if it's not realistic, it's not relatable.
It sets the tone so much for like understanding what people's acceptance of this outbreak in the world is, what their knowledge of zombies and shit is, their response to it is as characters is very quickly. And so I love this setup we get here with Joel and his daughter Sarah and his brother Tommy.
Mm.
And Joel is like completely dependent on his daughter.
He
can't make himself breakfast. He can't wake himself up.
He's a real like dude-y dad, because he's like a construction worker, him and his brother. That's the sound of things, or builders or something.
Ex-veteran, or I guess current veteran.
Yes.
He was in Desert Storm.
This one become an ex-veteran.
Yeah.
You go back to war.
You just admit that you were lying about it the whole time. You go, I just wanted discounts at the shopping mall. it was stolen valor.
For those who don't know the ins and outs of the series, in terms of casting, Nico Parker plays Sarah.
Right.
I'd never seen her before in anything. Don't know.
She does great in this. She anchors this whole first part.
Totally. Yeah. And obviously, Pedro Pascal is Joel, and Gabriel Luna plays Tommy.
Right. I immediately really like what Pedro Pascal is doing here, because you've got his pre and post losing Sarah vibes in this show. And like he's off his feet. He's working real hard. He's clearly completely like his world revolves around his daughter.
Yes.
You can tell.
Yeah.
And she is a good, cool daughter.
Yeah.
She fixes up his watches, his birthday present.
Mm.
And you're getting those patches of, you know, something's wrong in Jakarta.
Yes.
And he's not a worldly man.
He doesn't know where Jakarta is or what it is.
Jakarta, I barely know her.
Good name for a podcast.
Okay, our Indonesia podcast.
Spin-off about Indonesia.
We can go to Bali. We can check it out.
I could go by Nasi Lemak House on the way here next week.
Yeah.
Get us some burgers.
All right.
So we've got them living this, you know, like single parent, clearly, life. And they've got these nice suburban neighbors.
Yes.
Bit annoying.
They seem to be a bit putting upon them in terms of their time.
Very intertwined, but they probably look after Sarah all the time.
Yes.
Because Joel is working real hard here and it's a simple suburban life that they've got here.
Yeah.
That throughout the course of these few minutes we see, you know, some ambulances rushing past.
Yes. Yeah.
Some fire trucks rushing behind them. We're in 2003 as well. We mentioned that, but that, yep. that is significant in this early part, especially where Sarah's reception to this news
mm-hmm.
being a little scary makes a ton of sense. Totally. 9/11 was a couple years beforehand. Yep. We're yep. in September. I looked it up as well because this happens September 26, 2003.
Yes.
The last movies to ever exist were Duplex with Danny DeVito and The Rundown with Peter Berg and Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Oh, okay, sure. I remember that movie. Right. Yeah. So that's where he has the baseball bat, I think. And he just goes around town hitting people with a bat.
Oh, well, yeah.
A useful movie if that was your last one to yeah. give you a bit of an explanation of what to do for the next 20 years.
The yes. 2003 scene is like the set designer on this is having a great time. They've got, you see in Sarah's room, one of those like chunky old radios.
Yes.
When we see her at school, the first thing we see is a photo of George Bush.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Up on the thing. Yes.
On the classroom wall.
Yeah.
The phone that Joel has have one of those little leather pouches with sort of plastic cover. Yeah. I'd forgotten about them completely.
Yep.
And that was an absolute thrill to see.
That was, I reckon my dad had that work phone. That was exactly
the little the setup. Clip for the
that's
for
it.
The belt. Yeah. Yep.
So we get like this really tense few minutes here of watching Sarah go to school. We obviously know something's gonna happen because
we've seen the trailers, we've played the game.
And I've just got a sense of cinematic intuition.
Okay.
That's how I did it. And Sarah goes around after like getting Joel's birthday present, fixing his watch up and going to school and everything. She comes home and goes around to these neighbors, and there's an old lady with the neighbors who's living with them, and she's clearly not well.
Yep.
Yep.
And we get this fucking great shot of Sarah looking through the like DVD shelf for like a second present for Joel to borrow and
to
pretend
steal.
She got for him. And there's this out of focus, the old woman behind her like opening her mouth and having this like
starting to sort of twitch and
horrific.
Yeah.
Like the fact that it was out of focus too makes her mouth seem like this more and like her face distorts even more than you could make it in focus. Like,
And if you have the subtitles on, it says brackets whispered brains. that does kind of take some of the sting out of it a little bit, you know.
But it's for the less eagle-eyed viewers. It's sort of a tipping the hand a bit.
The less eagle-eyed who are hearing impaired and what the subtitles are.
That's
and
right.
Her, their border collie gives her a big fucking, something's not right here stare.
Staring
dogs
at
are always the first.
They know those they dogs. Are. They know. Those smart. Beautiful dogs.
I show my dog the lotto numbers.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I can't show him the lotto numbers, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I'm so poor.
You know what? When I go home, I'm going to pretend to be a zombie and see if my dog picks up on
Ooh.
It.
Ooh.
Yeah. Every week, my lotto numbers are 2, 2, 2, 2, 2. I've not won yet.
But it'll come up at some point, though.
It's
that's the thing.
Got
statistically.
To happen.
It has to, yeah. Before the end of infinity, it has to come up.
Joel and Sarah have this lovely relationship. They're sarcastic with each other. They're comfortable. She's been put in the position of like having to be a little older than she clearly is because he's off his feet and like can't keep it together clearly.
Yep.
And the implication is, I mean, he's a single parent, but that his partner, Sarah's mother, has passed away. Because she's being looked over, looked after by the neighbors and stuff in a way where she's not. You get the sense that she's just living there full time, that it's not just like a shared custody thing. Like,
there's certainly no hint of the mother being around.
Yeah.
So, that is the conclusion you're led to draw. And so they have, you know, a late birthday exchanging of presents. They watch a movie together. Sarah falls asleep and gets carried up to her room. And Joel gets a call from Tommy. I'm in the clink. I got into a fight at a bar with this crazy guy who was saying brains, and I was like, why do you keep saying that?
Are you implying I don't have any brains?
What are you telling me? Your favorite character from fucking Thunderbirds?
Joel,
Pinky
it's Tommy.
Ender?
Joel, it's Tommy. I got bad news. I was working in the lab late one night.
Sarah is so Joel, you know, tells him, okay, I'll come get you from the jail. And Sarah gets woken up later by some explosions and a helicopter and shit.
Yeah.
Goes downstairs looking for an explanation. She's freaked out by the news. She's been talking about it during the day.
Yeah.
Goes to the neighbor's house and is a little too inquisitive follows this trail of blood
Before that, right, she turns a TV on and it says, stay indoors.
Right, yeah.
Like, yeah, it's the, like,
girl, what the hell are you doing?
It's full, the emergency broadcast kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which this is, I mean, this is kind of weird to think that this is kicking off. And as we've seen in real world in the last couple of years, you know, the emergency broadcast system wouldn't get turned on. There'd be Gal Gadot and a whole bunch of other celebs singing Imagine being broadcast around the clock.
Like Jessica Simpson is...
imagine there's some fungus.
So...
Or it'd be their, like, you know, governor or something, you know, showing up in a North Face jacket being like, hey, everyone, the case numbers for the cordyceps fungal infection today are 150,000.
It is weird. Like, it's going to be hard not to, to talk about it during the show because of the nature of what it is. But, like, when you're getting, when we go to the, like, Fedra camp later on, you know, curfew times and, like, public hangings for disobeying the lockdown rules. It's like, it's hard to make a show like this now that doesn't come across as a little bit like, yeah, man, they fucking fucked us with that virus shit, dude.
This is where it's heading.
Right.
Yeah, I was starting to turn into a zombie, but I really didn't want to miss my cousin's wedding. So I just went. It's fine. It's just, you know, it makes you feel a little cloudy.
I couldn't freakishly gape my maw with a mask on. It fucking felt weird.
You don't see any anti-vax protests in this show, though. I think everyone's would be pretty much like...
I think that's the...
I don't want to get it.
Yeah, the 20-year time jump is to thank for that. Yeah. I'm sure, like, right after this scene that we're watching, there would have been...
Yeah.
Well, and you know what? 2003, we're pre-Twitter, pre-bullshit.
Oh, true. Yeah, true.
Very true.
A lot of people couldn't have gotten quite as radicalized as they did.
Right.
When's bird flu? That's around here, isn't it?
It's back again, too. It's 2000, I reckon, 6 was bird flu.
Yep.
Then, like, you're talking 10 or 11 for swine.
Yes, yes, yes.
Anyway, you got a trail of blood and the sweet old man has had his neck bitten out.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the... quiet old lady is biting out the other lady's neck.
Yeah.
Big glump of hair in her mouth, disgusting looking.
That looked cool. I thought that was a really, cool
very,
effect.
Very repulsive. Disgusting. Mm. Yeah.
And we get our first sense during this next sequence of what type of zombies these are.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the Klutzfast type.
Yeah.
They're the fucking jackass, trip over everything, knock into things, sprint at you.
Yeah.
Zombies. They can navigate their way, like, down a corridor and around a corner. But then once they're out and just in the clear, they'll fall over about 8 times.
Yahoo serious motherfuckers, Mr. Accident. Like, one of them later on, literally, like, rolling along on, like, a drinks cart at a restaurant.
Yeah.
And so Sarah's freaked out by this, runs outside, and Joel and Tommy are here in the pickup truck.
Mm.
And have to club their first, is this a person, what's going on?
Right.
Tommy's got the gun. He says, what are we doing, Joel? Joel just comes in with the big wrench and just goes wackadoo.
Yeah. We're killing. We're hitting people in the head.
What do you think we're doing? Did I stutter?
You didn't say anything, Joel.
So the answer is no.
And, like, okay, Joel kicks in here from being oh, I can't wake up, I need my eggs, I don't like pancakes, whatever.
Right, right.
He is now in, the only thing that matters here is protecting Sarah.
Yep.
They drive
He's
off.
He's in combat mode. Are we to assume that both of the brothers are veterans?
It seems like it. The way that Tommy's holding his gun and everything, he seems to know what he's doing. Like, he takes a very accurate shot later on.
Yeah.
I grabbed the PlayStation controller off Ben's coffee table I mashed the X button at the same time that he swung the wrench. So
nice.
I kind of felt like I was a little bit more immersed in this scene than maybe you guys were.
No, that's fair. That's fair. It was the first time you've actually connected as well.
And we get, like, so, you know, people coming out of their houses going like, Joel, what's going on? And Joel ignoring everyone, yelling them like,
Get the fuck back inside. Get inside, you know, like,
but you're not coming with us. There's a family on the side of the road as they drive away. And he's like, fuck them. We've got we're out for ourselves here.
Burning house that they drive past.
Oh, that was a beautiful image.
Yeah.
Like, it looks great, this show. Yeah. It looks real, honestly.
Yeah.
But yeah, we didn't say either that this is by the showrunners of Chernobyl, the miniseries that came out a few years ago now. And I mean, that they would have loved that 68 opening. That's right in their wheelhouse, the Chernobyl people. But that their ability in that show to recreate, you know, 80s Russia, was pretty much impeccable. Or Ukraine,
Soviet Union,
yeah. And it's continuing in this a much more difficult, you know, reality to execute. Mm.
Right. It's because they've got some. So we get this really like tense and exciting sort of. Not car chase because they're not being, but like car escape where it's mostly shot from inside the cabin of the car, which is like so places you in it and is so much more terrifying to have these big, you know, planes falling out of the sky and people running around and not be milking it necessarily, to be focusing on the scared faces of the people in the car,
right,
the feeling of like being trapped. And trying to escape, it really fucking works the way they shoot this whole thing.
It the rest of the show as well. Once we time jump, was giving me serious Children of Men vibes.
Yeah.
They don't quite do the, you know, the single take, you know, single shot thing with the chase, but
no,
like you say, it is a similar feeling of putting you as close to being within that action as you can.
You're at least locked in this cabin the whole time, which is like as close as.
Mm.
It would be fucking insane to film this whole thing one shot.
Oh, my God.
There'd be no way. But
So they, all the roads are blocked. They cut, like, all the highways are completely jammed. They go off-road. They go through a field. They end up in the city. Oh, that's something they talk about, is that apparently this is just kicking off in the cities.
Yeah,
in the city of Austin. That's where people are getting sick. They're out in the burbs.
Sarah's like, are we sick? Are we okay? And they're like, you probably have to spend a lot of time in the city.
And that's the old lady from next door. She'd been going into the hospital. So they surmise that's where she got it. But then you see this moment of Sarah worrying that maybe she is sick because she's gone into the city to go to the watch repair place.
Yeah,
right.
And then, they, what happens? They get into the city and then their car is immediately wrecked.
A plane crashes behind them and like a part of the fuselage or whatever smashes into their car.
Fucking, that was so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like we talk about, like it being feeling so immediate and real. And then also you do get these spectacular, a jumbo jet crashing into Main Street.
Mm.
It was,
And like you're getting this. A big disaster for Joel, especially with plane crashes being involved, that leads years later to government overreach. And you know what I mean? Like the parallels that they're making between, you know, the terrorist attacks. And Sarah's first thing is like, is this terrorist? What's happening?
Yeah, yeah.
It's really, it's so like current for the time, you know? It's so in that reality.
Yeah.
And it really fucking, so it works when they crash, Sarah's leg is broken, her ankle's broken, Tommy gets separated from them, they have to run to the river, they like are avoiding a fucking, one of the guys.
Oh yeah.
A zombie guy.
Yeah, I loved this, a little
one
pack
of, the
guys
of them after them.
That are all munching around and one of them just goes.
yeah,
a little meerkat.
Pops up like a little meerkat,
Yeah.
The way that they're moving is that the fast type of zombie, the 28 Days Later thing is my preferred flavor of zombie.
I think it's the more scary flavor, for sure, or like tense, right? It creates that feeling of tension. It could be just some guy with a gun, but you know, someone chasing you like that so viciously is.
It seems unstoppable.
Yeah,
it seems like there's just, and it would have been like they're running away and they are saved briefly by the military, who we've seen that the military is here. We've seen jets fly over.
Yes.
We've seen or this huge row of. Yeah, tanks
like
and whatever,
blockades and stuff. Yeah, yeah.
And there's like one soldier down by the river where they were going to meet Tommy, and he shoots the guy after them, and then raises his flashlight intimidatingly up towards Joel and Sarah. Takes a couple of orders, like says there's some people here, one of them's hurt, and is clearly given the order you need to kill everyone who's injured.
Yes,
and it's brutal.
Mm.
This is like a fucking huge opening volley to do for a story.
Yeah.
Is to have this father and daughter. The daughter's very likable. They're clearly very attached, obvious. But like, he fires a round or like a burst of bullets off. They roll down a hill.
Yep.
Tommy shows up at the last second to like shoot this soldier.
Like at the minus last second.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, hey.
True.
Maybe before the burst of machine gun fire.
Yeah, because they'd like agreed to meet down by the river, so it makes sense
that
he's there, and he manages to get the soldier before he shoots Joel. But Sarah has been really fucking shot and dies in Joel's arms.
Yeah.
Like heartbreakingly too. the Pedro Pascal is a really good fucking actor, and I forget her name who's playing Sarah, but
Nico Parker,
she does a great job.
Yeah.
And
yeah, shame that she won't be back in the show.
I don't know if we'll get flashbacks or whatever, possibly.
Right, yeah. Right.
Well, and also, like, it is a long episode, like we said, but yeah, all this segment, this is 35 minutes or so
worth
of the ep. So, yeah, a huge chunk of it devoted to, if you were watching this completely clean, this could have really snuck up on you.
Yeah.
You
spent
so
yeah.
much time with this family at the start.
Yes.
Totally. So Sarah dies and we jump forward 20 years.
Yep.
Into the current year, 2023. Mm.
Oh.
Yeah. It's now.
Damn, it's now.
However, it don't look like now.
Things different.
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
I've not been to Boston because opening is set in Texas, and Joel, we see later, has somehow made his way up to Boston, but we get the scene set for us really fucking well with this kid sort of wandering the ruins of Boston. And
they go from Austin to Boston.
Yeah.
Do you reckon that's on purpose, that rhyme?
Damn.
Mm, yeah, I don't know.
I guess if you were making
desperately trying to think of a third city. Gloucestershire?
I mean, you gotta be making a song up about
Lost in Translation.
Yeah,
was that out in before 2003?
You know what? I reckon that was a 2003 movie.
It might have been. Yeah,
yeah. Watch Lost in Translation. Went from Austin to Boston, and end of song. But we get this little kid wandering up to
little Wolfman looking motherfucker. Yeah. He was giving me Teen Wolf vibes.
Little kid out of the wild.
He's not had a haircut for a while, it seems.
Cool little shoes on.
Yep.
Clearly, you know, has been through the ringer.
Mm-hmm.
Is not looking super well. Collapses in front of these guards, in front of this enormous concrete wall that has this like really ironic welcome written over it, that they've, you know, repurposed a traffic light to be a red green indicator of locked and unlocked.
Yep.
It looks shabby, it looks shitty, but there's like, you know, big SWAT team military looking kind of guys guarding it,
and it says on the front, quarantine zone.
Yes. And they take this kid inside, and he sits down with one of the women who's one of these guards,
customs agents.
They run through the TSA.
Mm.
We see a couple of posters on the wall about like signs of infection that are kind of like not handwritten. They're clearly, you know, they've been printed up, you would assume, kind of early on in this all kicking off.
It's like, you know, sing happy birthday while you wash your hands.
it's got like an indication that depending on where you get bitten, it takes a different amount of time to turn.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It seems like it's like 24 to 48 hours in the leg, 8 hours in the arm, like 15 minutes in the neck, something like that.
Yeah.
Things to look out for. Eating brains.
Yeah.
Yes. Very, very bad.
Yes.
Nipple play only takes 2 minutes, by the way, to turn. And this kid gets like a check with some big Star Trek fucking recorder. What are they called?
Transponder?
No, there's a word they use.
Grandsponder.
That's the one. Tricorder.
Oh.
That's from Star Trek.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
My laminated cool card. It's getting taken back. But
I got to say, in terms of that tech, that piece of technology, being able to work out that you've turned, given that we kind of see everything in the world just kind of like blew up when this kicked off, there's a part of me that goes, how did they make that?
How did they develop
this new thing?
Because we hear later on that they've still got some factories going. There's one that makes pills and bullets up.
That's right, yeah.
And like,
although that is like specifically contraband, so it's almost it's stranger almost.
It looks like there's a, it's like a blood test.
Yeah,
and it either the whole screen goes red.
Isn't that fucking what Elizabeth Holmes got done for pretending that she could make one of those machines?
Oh, I'm thinking of Enola Holmes. What mystery did she get embroiled in?
Yeah, that was her thing. Fucking whatever that company was called.
I don't know.
It was that. It was like an instant blood test that could test for anything. But
The series The Dropout is about. Yes, correct.
Well, in this world, it can test you for mushrooms.
And then this was brutal. We see Joel again, first time we've seen him since the time jump.
This kid gets like, they're like, hey, just a bit of medicine that will get you your favorite food. This kid's tied into the chair. They brought him in. and they give him this injection in the neck. And then, yeah, we see Joel again, 20 years older, a little gray, absolute zaddy.
Yeah, he's got a job.
That means zombie daddy.
Got a job taking bodies off this truck. And
what a job. His fucking hell.
His friend who he's with, she's kind of looks at him and she goes, oh, I can't do this one. And look down, it's the little kid, and he chucks him onto the fire. Yeah. Absolutely brutal stuff.
Yeah. They're really letting you know early on, like, kids die in this world.
Right.
Yeah.
It's usually the one thing that's, like, you know, verboten in most, even, like, zombie media and stuff like that.
Right.
It's, you don't often see kids die.
And especially, like,
and if thank fuck you're doing this.
Finally.
Yeah. So, yeah, Joel, pretty unflinchingly, chucks this kid into the fire, picks up his like ration vouchers for his work. He hasn't lost his work ethic. Mm. He's asking for more work. He's clearly saving up for something here.
Right.
Because we find out a little bit after this, and we get like sort of some shots of this quarantine zone.
Right.
People looking dirty as hell.
Yep.
The buildings are all run down. Everything's very post-apocalyptic.
Yep.
Yeah, you know.
Some people painting over a firefly symbol.
Yeah, we find out that later on it's like this sort of cool-looking, very angular Banksy.
Yeah, stencil sort of thing.
Yeah.
For something called the fireflies. We don't really fully get what that is until a bit later on. But I think all the world, like the hanging stuff is fucked up, but it also is really effective at telling you exactly what kind of world you're living in, you know, in 2023 in The Last of Us.
And we've had public hangings in the past.
Mm-hmm.
No reason they couldn't come back in a post, because, you know, you get the impression that this is a little bit feudal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very, very military presence, sort of. You are locked down and under the rule of this
of dictator Dan.
Fedra.
Just a reminder that there is a personality type that's just like,
right,
just they've just always been into that. That it's like,
right,
the first time they heard that news about Jakarta, they're like, I got a good feeling public hangings are coming back off the back of this.
Yeah.
I'm gonna be front and center with the rope, ready to go.
And Joel is taken away by this one of the gun toters,
mm-hmm, yep,
and does a little drug deal with
this BJ Novak ass motherfucker.
And there's like a joke earlier that Sarah goes like, I deal drugs, I deal hardcore drugs.
Oh yeah.
Which, like, you know, ridiculous joke for how would imagine earning money that way. Which Joel 20 years later is currently in the process of. He's gotten him some, not oxy, but something else.
Yeah,
some pills.
But yeah, so his work ethic, like you say, is better than ever. Like, he's not just doing, you know, the getting his hands dirty. He's getting his morals dirty as well. He is, it looks like, a smuggler of some kind.
And he's a fucking hard ass.
Yes.
Like, the guy tries to give him 5 tokens short and he's immediately like, no, 5.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. And he's looking for a car and a car battery.
Yes.
We hear is what he's working towards.
Yeah. I wonder why.
Well, do you want to find out?
I'd love to,
And I liked this, just
he's
like,
going to drive around the country looking for another city that rhymes with Austin.
Oh!
That he can relocate to.
There's
got to
be one out there.
Never give up hope.
It's just Boston and Austin, Joel. This is ridiculous.
No, on the West Coast, maybe. Seattle?
Mm. Joel, no. Not even close.
That's the opposite.
Just sound it out, brother.
What if we rename Portland?
You can't. Boston. It's gone.
Oh,
yeah.
So he makes that deal, and we see, like, we cut to another new character, which is Tess. Here we find out, and she's been like bailed up and beaten up and put into this like kind of interrogation-y situation.
Yeah.
With this guy called Robert.
Yep.
Who is like trying to tell, like, he fucked her over that during this conversation they have.
Mm.
He sold the battery that she was gonna have, and she's like, let's just drop it. I know you fucked me. I've fucked other people in the past. We'll call it a wash. I just want to forget about it.
Mm.
And he is real anxious.
Yes.
He's real nervous that that's not going to be the end of it. She's like, okay, I'll drop it. He's like, fuck you. No, you won't.
Yeah.
And he's afraid of Joel.
Yeah, I can tell my boys to apologize, but your boy is not going to let it lie.
Yeah. He's a big hard ass.
Yeah. He's a scary man.
He's not going to stop until I'm the last of us. And then
he
she
does
says,
say that. Oh. Yeah.
Clicker.
She is Anna Torv is the actor from Mindhunter Right. Fringe. She's an Aussie, I believe.
Oh, okay, wow.
Cool. Yeah. And
you should try and get her on this.
Oh, okay.
In Australia would be enough. Yeah.
Okay. Let's
it
try.
It should be. You'd like to think it would be.
From one true blue okay to another. Come on, our podcast called Clicker. I barely know her.
G'day, love. Now tell us about this bloody zombie show you're in. Bit of fun.
Fucking hell. Now, is that all makeup or do they have to bash you?
So, I like her as an actor and I've forgotten she was in this and is a pleasant surprise. She's good in this.
She's doing a great job of, like, similar to Joel, another sort of hard ass, just like,
yeah.
Hey, the world's fucked. Just let's
adapt.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
A real survivor. And we literally see her survive a big blast.
Yeah.
One of the Fedra vehicles outside.
Yes.
Because they've been sort of, you've seen bits and pieces of whispers or whatever of like these fireflies that they were painting over one of their symbols doing terroristy shit.
Right.
We find out later, you know, it's the classic, they think they're freedom fighters. They're trying to liberate this quarantine zone. But there's bombings going on around this area at the moment.
And I got to say, I like a couple of early reviews of the show that I read mentioned that some of this stuff was kind of like raced through a bit quickly. Especially for people who haven't played the games, like they might get lost by the like Firefly and Fedra stuff. But so far, I think that's like, I think it's fine. I think it's, and obviously that might change, but like,
right.
You can't be too on the nose about, you know, it's like, you get it. It's right. Quarantine zone.
There's a military, you know, police.
Yep. And then there's people that go, that sucks.
Right.
Yeah.
We and disagree.
Because they're so tropey, you know, it's like, it doesn't really matter if they're called the Fireflies or something else. You should understand what they
and
are.
We see their actions laid out pretty specifically where, like, this explosion goes off and there's a ton of troops there straight away.
Yep.
They arrest Tess. She, you know, goes with her hands up and stuff. But, like, a bit later on, we see Marlene, who we learn is the sort of head of the Fireflies in this area.
Yes.
Planning out and...
In the fucking Boston area.
Yeah, that's the thing. There don't seem to be any actual Bostonites left in Boston.
Well, that's true. It seems like people, I guess, have moved around a lot. If they've gone from Austin to Boston, Boston have gone to Austin, had a rhyme swap.
I don't know if I'm in Austin or Boston.
It weird, kid.
We do know that people in the cities were the first to get hit, so... Maybe this, you know, a lot of people who lived there died.
And sure.
Yeah, you're right. People are moving around, finding somewhere safe.
And I suppose if you've got like these big concrete walls with huge military presences there, you're not going to have an enormous number of those. They maybe can't be in every city. So if they exist, people are getting shipped from this wider area to the Boston.
Yep,
true.
Yep.
Or whatever.
Yeah, meeting a dyed-in-the-wool Bostonite in this world and just being like, man, you didn't move around at all when things were kicking off. That's actually, it's pretty sad, don't you think?
Yeah, that's embarrassing.
It's really pretty lame.
Yeah.
Every day I wake up and the best part of my day is thinking you've gotten out of the quarantine zone. the explosion goes off and Tess is sort of caught up in the middle of it. Sees that Robert has escaped via this trail of blood.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is initially clearly going to seek him out. And then gets apprehended.
And along with the Firefly stuff, we do, and the Fedra stuff, we do seem like the other people are like kind of clear, or like want to be clear, like, I'm not a Firefly. You know, it's not like everyone's part of the resistance.
Yes.
Resistance. Like, people are like, yeah, I'm not one of these fucking terrorist Firefly people. Like, I just want to get by.
And they've got their sort of like look to the lights, like semi-cultish kind of.
Yes.
Like, Joel gets hit up by one later on who comes door knocking and he's like, hey, if you tell me I need to follow the light, I'm going to knock your jaw off.
Yeah. If you tell me the good news...
I would never be able to be a hard ass in post-apocalypse. I'm going to knock your jaw off, Buster.
I'm going to box your ears, you naughty fellow.
I'm going to give you six of the Queen's finest.
I'm going to pull your pants down and give you a bare bottom spanking. Then you'll be sorry.
The Queen is still alive in this world, by the way. That's why I said the Queen's finest. It wasn't just that I forgot.
Right. Because she just died of like natural causes recently.
She
like,
could have still died in 2022.
Yeah.
I suppose.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I wonder if it would have been like when, you know, like if Tom Hanks turned into a clicker immediately.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
To signal the start of
held up production of the Elvis movie.
Yeah.
They just had to wait until he was not a clicker anymore.
Right.
Or they just film around it.
Tom Cruise on set being like, you need to wear your masks or else we're going to have to shut down.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that shot in the Elvis movie where it's like, he's what?
He's infected?
So we see all of that, and I agree that like they've obviously left, they've not spelled stuff out with people going like, you know, like the fucking TV thing. It is a very tropey thing to have news or TV people tell you the exact plot of what's going on to get you set up, and that is how they start this.
Right.
You know, with it's a hard thing to do.
That's how you'd find out.
It's difficult. It's that or like a scrolling fucking wall of Star Wars text to give people context. But they don't do that with Fedra and with Fireflies and whatever. No one goes like, it's been 20 years and it's crazy how we're still living under Fedra rule.
Right.
It stands for Federal Enforcers of whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the game had like a credit sequence where a lot of news kind of stuff was kind of flashing up as all the creative team was coming up
for
a few minutes.
But spinning newspapers flying towards you. Baseball headline. Prodigy makes it big.
Headline, brains. Oh, no. The editor-in-chief, he's turned.
They're so biased.
How could you tell, Tommy? How could you tell, honestly?
You're getting
with Murdoch in charge.
Just opinion pieces in the news these days. So we see all of that, and then we go over to a little girl locked up to a radiator. Stuck in this, you know, there's a lot of housing here in Boston that seems to be pretty, it doesn't seem like Fedra going through and sweeping buildings necessarily.
Right.
Because it seems like at least the Fireflies here have their own little
base,
little apartment block or something even, yeah.
We don't know necessarily that this is where Ellie is now, but there is a one of those when you're lost in the darkness thing spray painted on the wall. But a woman comes in and is asking her to count to 10.
Right.
Clearly doing a zombie check.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And she's calling herself Veronica,
mm-hmm.
I think at this point.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, where's Jughead? And they... is that from Jughead?
Where is Jughead? Where is Jughead in this universe?
Oh, God, yeah. Do you think Riverdale was produced?
I don't think Riverdale would have been produced, but the Archie comics definitely would exist.
Yeah, true. They'd be flapping around in the breeze somewhere on a pile of bones.
Someone finds it and thinks it's a religious text. So there's just like a bit where they travel into some city and just everyone's wearing the little paper crown thing that Jughead has.
Oh, yes.
It shows so grounded. But so we briefly see her. She's clearly under suspicion of being infected.
And they've clearly been doing this test on her for like 5 days in it. Days and days. She's very off it. She's very combative to them. Mm-hmm. They ask her to count to 10. She does this. I thought this was the best part of the show.
Oh, this was
she goes
cool.
1 through 8,
mm-hmm.
and then when you think she's going to go 9, 10, she goes...
Well, that would be the next in the sequence.
Yeah. Well, that's what it is, yeah. So I thought, you know, I was about to go to the toilet because I was like, well, I know what's happening from here. She instead...
2 seconds.
thank God I stayed put.
Yeah, yeah.
Because instead she says, fuck you.
And this is...
Ben, now I'm going to tell you what she said.
This is... Bella Ramsey,
yes.
Who, like Pedro Pascal, also went through Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
She was Lyanna Mormont in that. And she is, this girl who we find out later is called Ellie. And she's doing a great job, I think.
Yes. Yep. Very,
she's like,
very, the spirit of the character is perfectly portrayed, I feel like.
Yeah.
Like, obviously doesn't look that much like her, but that, is playing the character in her own kind of way that is just as convincing and interesting.
Like, confident and like take no shit, very observant, we see later on.
Right.
Yep.
Clearly clever.
Yeah.
Well, we were saying before we started watching the episode that how much of a relief it is having had in the last year a film adaptation of Uncharted, which is another video game.
Terrible movie, not to bother watching.
Made by the same people that made The Last of Us video game, if anyone didn't know that. And it's terrible. And the main character in that could not be... It may as well just have been a different script, a different thing. Like,
it's
different guy, does not embody any of the same characteristics or vibe or flavor at all. And these two, even though they look different, but they're like... Yeah, they're spot on. If you have an attachment to these characters already, these two just are doing a great job. They just really register as believable.
But neither of them feel like they're doing any kind of imitation at all.
No.
Both of these characters feel like they are coming to similar conclusions given similar
like
source
life
material the first group of actors. And they're doing an awesome job. We see Joel cutting in a line here.
Oh, yeah,
jumping a queue.
He's clearly... he's got his connections, right? He's set up in town.
Yeah.
He's the guy who he does the favors.
People know him. People like him. You know, a lot of people in this world, they have a thing called main character syndrome. But in this case, in terms of Joel from The Last of Us, he's actually not wrong.
Yeah.
He is the main character.
And a few of them have side character syndrome where they're a bit less well drawn.
Happy to get blown up or shot in the head.
Right, yeah. Oh, part of the deal that Joel did with the Fedra officer before, I think, was where he gets like a little baggie of something in return, right? Or where did he get those?
He got joints. The cop guy gave him joints
because he gave the cop guy pills. $5.
That's right.
Inverted commas short.
Yes, yeah. Yes. So he's got a little, you know, pay it forward system going on where
he's the guy.
He's the guy, and he's come to the other guy who's got the radio.
Very prisony.
Yeah. Too. Yeah. Yes, very. It is.
He's huge line.
The guy who can set you up.
Yeah.
And is this meant to be? Huge line. People waiting to see this guy.
Yep.
Because he's monitoring all the radio transmissions. So this is people wanting to know.
Yeah.
Friends and family. Has anything come in about them? Can you send a message back?
Right.
That kind of
this
stuff.
This seems
right.
to be. Yeah. Exactly. Like the communication. Dude, yeah. He has a little bit of world-building syndrome. Because he's like, I get my smarts on to stay up at night. But in case that was a question that a viewer might have.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I've also got a dumb son for some reason.
Yeah.
But he has been unable to hear from Tommy. They're talking about Tommy.
Yes.
There's some.
How did you feel about that, Tommy? Being constantly referenced in the show.
Oh, it was the most confusing hour and 20 minutes of my entire life. I kept thinking your TV was talking directly to me.
Yeah.
What do you mean you haven't heard from him? Simply listen to the podcast Clicker I Barely Know Her and you can hear all the latest.
Oh my God, I'm just realizing there might be a world in which podcasts don't exist.
It never happened to you.
Yeah, wow. That's,
really? 2000? Yeah. I feel like there'd be one or two out there in 03.
Not yet.
Really?
Nah, yeah, it would be...
Yeah, do we have the special
Ricky Gervais
edition?
Show had been done on XFM, but had not yet been turned into a podcast.
That's right. That's
signaling the beginning of the end.
Wait, do you mean people don't? Do you
they
mean
don't
this
exist
is also
yet.
A world where the special edition U2 iPod doesn't exist?
That would exist, I think, by 2003, maybe. But
September?
You know what?
It was?
Actually, no.
Yeah, yeah, right.
It that would have been 2004, I reckon.
I think How to Dismantle an Atomic Bomb is 2004.
Yeah,
I think you could be right. It's either 3 or 4.
People are walking around with iPod classics with just music, no podcasts, and no How to Dismantle an Atomic Bomb.
Jed have launched.
Yeah,
Jed have put out their debut album. They've got the ads. They've got their song in the iTunes ad by this point.
Right.
Thank God.
Yeah.
Yes.
Rollover DJ is one of the last songs ever mass produced and printed.
Honestly, culture had peaked anyway. So
Why
not?
He's already on the downturn. I think you've got The Simple Life on the air.
Mm-hmm.
Damn.
If Paris this, looking at that burning barn and being like, that's hot.
You know what? If this, let's say this podcast becomes just a massive smash hit, far eclipsing everything else we've ever done.
All right.
And so by the time the show is finished, it's like, hey, we can't just stop doing this. We got to keep this rolling. We just turn this into a just every week, hours long discussions about what was culturally, the world would be like if everything had stopped on September the 23rd, 2003. 26, sorry.
Yes. Please, I was 14. For example, Tom York, if he's still alive in this world, they've released Hail to the Thief.
Yep.
There's still photos of George Bush in classrooms and it's very relevant at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And they've already written and performed Nude live, but In Rainbows never comes out. So if you're traveling and you run into Tom York on the road, like Ed Sheeran in Game of Thrones, he might have been able to sing you in Rainbows.
Wow. Okay. That means the pay-as-you-want model has never been launched.
No, but I guess that's just the barter system, which they've gone back to.
Yeah.
If you can give him enough OxyContin, he'll sing it for you.
Okay. Guys, I mean, we could be stepping on some future storylines that are coming up in The Last of Us TV show. Let's be honest.
Okay,
and again, if this show becomes, not this podcast, but this HBO show becomes massive, as what happened with Game of Thrones, Ed Sheeran, are the National in it at some point?
In Game of Thrones,
I just finished watching it. I completely missed when they show
I think
up,
they perform at a certain wedding.
Okay.
Yeah. I think they're the band. Is that right?
I think that's true, yes. Yeah.
Well, yeah, we could see all of this stuff. So I would love to start seeing a bit of flashbacks to just life on the road, end of 2003.
I don't know about this. I don't like Jim Carrey traveling, performing the Grinch for people around Christmas time.
Yes.
That's actually fucking a sick
idea. Is awesome.
Exactly. See what happened to all the people we knew about in 2003.
Mm.
What's Johnny Knoxville doing?
Well, you know, similar to Game of Thrones, you know, there's two Last of Us video games and they just, you know, they're trying to do an adaptation.
Mm.
They run out of source material.
Right.
And then they're like, we got to pad this out until the third game comes out.
Mm.
So, yeah, Joel hears there's nothing, no news about Tommy. It's been 3 weeks. Normally he gets back to you the day after or whatever.
Yep.
And he gets the location of a radio tower or something or some sort of communication point where either Tommy is
the
or the news comes from. Some sort of this is where you could find out more about Tommy, even if he's not there or something.
Right, it was like
that.
The last place he passed through or something. Mm-hmm. Last place he messaged from or something.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And it's a fair distance away. Yeah, Wyoming.
It's in Wyoming, which I'm not sure how far away from Boston Wyoming is. I'm not great with my US geography.
Yeah, I think it's a long way, right? Boston's East Coast, Wyoming's Midwest.
I'm going to look it up on Google Maps.
Well, he gets this map.
No spoilers, Tommy.
He's drawing his finger an awful long way across this map.
That's
he gets
true. He has
a circle on.
A lot of drinks of whiskey, of I assume like home fermented whiskey.
Right. And he's planning out a route. So to go and find out more about Tommy. So Tommy's still out there somewhere.
When you're planning out a route, you shouldn't have too much whiskey. Otherwise,
it won't work.
It's not going to go
the
well.
The car battery's going to be a dud.
That's right.
So, he kind of plans out this route to... He's clearly going to leave town and go look for Tommy.
Yep.
Slams a bunch of whiskey and pills.
I guess he's already been trying to, get the car battery in the car because, like he says, it's already been 3 weeks, so...
He's clearly been planning this for a couple of weeks or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Passes out. His watch is broken. We get some shots of that.
Yep.
Yes. So many shots. I think it was like very, very early. I guess in the 2003 era, apart from the clock shop, there was a lot of focusing on the time shots.
Yeah.
I guess I don't know why.
Specifically, that lady, the I assume wife of the clock shop owner, she comes in and goes, "We're closing now." And then he goes, "But we don't close until 7. And it's currently 3:15.
He did say that.
That's very specific.
Yeah.
I suppose, like, to give us a sense of how quickly this is happening.
Sure.
To keep us, like, without thinking there's been any sort of time skip. Which I don't know if we would have even thought that. But you're right. There's an awful lot of time.
Yeah.
In that first bit.
Yeah.
And then Ellie notes later, Joel's watch is broken now. Well, bloody stop the clocks. That's what they say.
Hey, still right twice a day.
That's true. Silver linings. It's almost like he's stuck in the past.
Whoa. I
almost
loved the curtain of that clock shop being a big clock.
That was cool.
Fucking rad.
But then it was like, that clock's only right twice a day. Is this a bad clock shop? Because it never moves forward.
If they had a functional roll-up clock on their thing,
that
would be
clock.
More professional.
Mm. Was that... I couldn't... Was that clock thing, was that printed on the curtain? Yeah. I thought it was on the window. It was like a decal on the window and then the curtain was white. And
it looked like
it
rolled
visible.
Down.
Yeah, I thought so, but I wasn't looking that closely.
It would make sense in either position.
Yeah.
Anyway. Joel goes to sleep and then we see Tess come home and these two are clearly in a... You know, a bit more than a partnership. There's clearly some bed cuddling. I don't want to label them.
Okay, bed cuddling.
Wow. But she's the big spoon as well.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about that?
Joel needs it. Joel is lost without, specifically probably a female in his life. I say female not because I'm on a podcast and because I'm like, females, but because I'm referring to both women and his young daughter. You know, he needs
a feminine presence.
He doesn't seem to be able to hold things together without that from what we see in this episode.
Yep. Yeah.
With his daughter and with Tess here now.
Yep.
And she, when they wake up, kind of lays out to him, hey, here's what happened. He stiffed us on the battery. I got jumped by these fucking 19-year-olds, these fucking post-pando babies.
Yep. Mm.
These lunatics who grew up in this world, fucking assholes, goddamn Gen Z.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't call them Zoomers.
I guess they wouldn't have had that term yet.
Yeah, yeah.
Or at all.
Well, yes.
I can't imagine. I assume you've got bigger fish to fry than just labeling the generations and their annoying also, little foibles.
Yeah. It would probably change what you'd call them if you'd be like, yeah, post-outbreak.
Right.
Yeah, we're not calling them Zoomers.
Post-Malones.
Yeah. Well,
they'd be like, who the fuck is that? But yeah, so they have like this, and she's the whole time being like, now don't fly off the fucking handle.
Right.
Mm. I need you to take a breath and stay calm. Clearly Joel's a bit of a psycho.
Yeah.
He's cold and he can get whatever job done, but he's clearly an action man.
Mm. Right.
But he's also brutal. We see in this episode later on, he's a brutal man.
Yeah.
And we saw it from moment one of Outbreak, you know. He switches into brutal man mode.
Totally.
Starts hitting people in the head.
Well, and he also, when they were loading that child's body off the truck, he was like, oh, well, it's a dead kid that's got to go on the fire.
Right.
Life's a bitch and then you die.
And then you get thrown on the fire.
It's definitely... He's got just like this steely glazed kind of look.
Yes.
And Tess though is utilizing that now to be like, because Tess clearly also very fuck you.
Right.
I'll do what needs to
can
be done.
Can be pragmatic. Yes. But it maybe doesn't have quite the temper or the, you know, the sociopath thing that Joel has.
But makes this plan to like, well, fuck this. We'll go get the battery. We'll go fuck Robert over.
Yep.
We'll sneak through the subway to get to him. We know what to do.
And then we'll get the hell out of Jackson.
Bring your guns. We'll leave. Yeah. We'll go find Tommy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they make
not
this
Tommy Dasilo.
No.
to be clear.
Hey. Maybe I've been keeping this close to the vest.
Oh, shit.
You guys don't know. I might be showing up in the show.
There could be two Tommies in the show.
This is why you floated the idea of like, what if they like had people who already existed but just like in the show performing. Like, what if there was, is this a world where podcasts never existed? Because if that's true, then we fucked it.
I make
a lot of references to podcasts.
Hey, I was already doing stand-up before this all kicked off in the world of the show. Got in there by about two months.
Yeah, no.
And my first few gigs went pretty well, so.
Spending 20 years being an open micer.
They might stop in at the ESPY. We'll see a little poster, a little and more. That's me, guys.
Head down to High Voltage Open Mic at the Terminus Hotel in Clifton Hill.
Oh, hell yeah.
So we go back over to the what we learn is the Firefly building.
Mm-hmm.
There's a new, like, clearly in control woman here.
Mm-hmm.
Who her name is Marlene, and she's, like, extreme leader.
Yeah.
She gets questioned straight away as she walks in of, like, what are we doing? None of this makes any sense. Mm-hmm. Our people are dying. We've been fucking around having these fights for, like, 2 weeks.
Mm.
What's the plan here? And she's like, follow fucking orders is the plan.
Yeah. Fuck you, that's the plan.
Follow
always be clickering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess.
None of us have mentioned clickers in this episode once, but they'll come up.
Yeah.
Everyone in this room knows what they are.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But she like overrides the orders of this like sort of second in command woman and says, you two go to the Southwest thing, which she's like, I held them back from.
Right.
But then does lay out for her like the reason that we're doing all of this other stuff is to keep Fedra away from this one area where this is where the real shit's going to go down tonight. We're leaving and we've got cargo.
Yes.
Which is what Joel wants. Cargo.
I guess he does.
I guess if you're a mechanic, you're always wearing cargo pants.
You're right that you've done a bit of stand-up before the outbreak here.
I am right that I've been doing this professionally for 20 years.
But so there's like a note as well that when the sort of questioning woman sees it, she's like, oh, holy shit, okay, let's do whatever we need to do then. It's clearly a big deal thing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Given that we find out later what it is, I'm surprised there's not even more of a reaction, you know? It's like, oh, this is the biggest thing that I will ever learn about in my entire life.
It's been 20 years at this point, and you're seeing this written down and going, all right.
Okay.
It seems like they know they need to keep it super fucking quiet.
Yeah.
Like, it seems as though she has this reaction of like, oh, shit, I need to not say anything and fall back in line. Like, she turns back into a soldier, it looked like to me, you know?
Yeah.
Like, this is the biggest fucking deal. Like,
I would have been like, oh my God!
Yeah. Just I would have done a few cartwheels.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Baruga.
Yeah. They need to slap me to snap me out of it.
So we go back over.
I'm a cartoon character.
We go back over to Joel and Tess, who are wheeling and dealing and getting themselves some info and finding out what they need to do. Joel says, I'll crack you one if you keep wagging your chin to me, Buster.
I love that.
He's so tough as hell, man.
Yeah.
If you keep flapping your gums, I'm gonna have to give you, I'll slap you silly.
Yeah, he says that and he called him Buster.
That's
yeah.
how tough I'd manage
and
to
the
be.
Guy slinks off as yeah. if to say, well, you got me.
Yeah.
I was gonna say that exact thing. And I don't want to get my jaw punched in. Mm-hmm. So off I go.
I will say good casting for all of these bit parts.
Yeah.
Everyone looks like they've spent 20 years trying to stay alive. Like,
yeah. Great makeup and shit,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Costuming and all of it. Like, it
production
just
design is incredible, yeah.
Really grubby and everyone looks desperate and tired,
yeah,
and sad, and we're seeing a lot of people around with injuries, clearly, and all of that stuff. Like, it's,
yep.
it's
oh, the guy with no fingers. You remember that?
Oh,
right?
Yeah,
yeah,
done super, super well.
Yep.
We go back over to Marlene,
yes,
who sort of lays things out with Ellie now. They have this conversation where, like, you learn a bit more about what's going on here. So, like, Ellie is an orphan. She's...
This is the one bit of exposition I did feel was a little rushed. It was a little sure. conveniently like, yeah, well, I put you in an orphanage and then now you've broken out, but I put you there to keep you safe and it was because maybe you're... Like, it doesn't really explain why Marlene was like care... Like, because obviously we know now... Mm. She's precious cargo. She has this immunity.
They didn't know that back then, though. Yeah. I assume that it's because Marlene is sort of just looking after people in the area.
Right.
And this was like 14 years ago or whatever.
Right.
So making sure you're looking after orphans if you're a community-minded type, like a Firefly may be.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I suppose made sense to me, but it did seem like, oh, okay, that's odd. But,
right. Because then, like, she's put her into basically the military academy. And then it's like, oh, so you were going to let her be like a Fedra soldier? Or, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a little bit like, ah, whatever. We're just telling you the main plot points and we'll move on.
Exactly. And those points are like, hey, I know who you are. Stop calling yourself Veronica.
Right.
You're Ellie. I'm going to get you out of here. I'm going to unlock you. Here's a knife. But, like, you need
this
to trust
also
me.
Seems like right. something that's going to be dealt with a bit more in a flashback at some point.
Possibly,
was
yeah.
kind of how it registered to me.
Right.
Because it is a little, yeah, you're right. It's a little kind of.
Well, and they throw a couple of, like, because Ellie, she's talking to Ellie about, like, so you were in a Fedra school. You want to be a cop that bad?
Mm.
She's like, well, whatever. I don't want to be a terrorist. And she's like, oh, terrorist? Is that what you think we are? Was Riley a terrorist?
Mm.
We don't know who Riley is.
That's
yet.
Right.
No.
So, you know. We'll obviously either learn more about that or go, why didn't we learn more about that?
Yeah. Yeah. Why we'll include that if it was not relevant?
We'll do Yeah. You know, you give something the benefit of the doubt and then you do a rewatch years down the line. You're like, yeah, why is that? In
yeah.
There?
Yeah.
Why
I guess,
did Dutch kill that cat in the shield?
If
nothing
Indiana,
ever came of it.
Yeah.
If Indiana Jones wasn't in this story, I guess it would have been exactly the same. That is pretty crazy, that one. The next scene on the TV version is a very cool scene that says...
hey, Knox, we're only talking about the TV version.
Well, I'm saying the version up on your TV was a cool scene that said network problem detected. So I'm going to load my phone up here with the episode to keep us scrubbing through.
It looks like maybe this is back online. Let's have a look.
No. I've got this real quick. Don't you even worry. Phones can do anything these days.
You got this?
I'm going to call my mom and ask her what happened. Okay, we're back. So, we're talking between Marlene and Ellie there. You're right that it is like quite a quick thing, but clearly they've got some sort of history.
Right.
And Marlene is extremely protective of Ellie, we see over the next few bits. Because yes. Joel and Tess work their way up through the sewers, see this big mushroom wall.
Oh, yeah. Yes. This looks great.
Yeah, there's like a guy... Who clearly this disease reaches some point, because like Joel says something where he's like, well, he's done. He's gone through the ringer.
The
final form.
Yes.
He's full on Freezer.
He's fully fungus.
And yeah, he's like stuck to the wall.
Yep.
And pretty hot looking.
This is a kind of thing that you can see. That was such a moment in this where I went, oh yeah, they really know what they're doing here.
Right.
Like the effect of that, if that had been slightly off, you know, right. You can imagine yourself just being like, that's just some plastic stuck to a wall. That doesn't, but like all the like gross and he's like really like stuck on there.
Doesn't look like a puppet or anything.
No. Exactly. Yeah.
They give it like a real glamour shot as well after they walk out. Right, they really hold on it of like, we've nailed this.
Yeah.
And like this is what happens.
Right. Yes.
This
exactly.
is what this is. This is where it takes people.
Yep.
And they're a bit freaked out because they're like, well, this wasn't here last time you came up here. Is that right? And then they can't quite open a door. There's blood coming through.
Mm.
They go through cautiously and it looks like this deal has gone bad.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Because we see Robert on the ground with a bullet through his cheek and this car battery that was clearly... that Tess immediately knows is like, well, that's a fucked car battery.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he managed to sell it twice. Little fucking fuckhead.
Little weasel.
I'm glad he got shot in the cheek.
Yeah.
Good thing it went through to his brain and he didn't just lose, you know, the lunch he was storing for later like a hamster. That's probably what they were aiming for.
It's kind of ironic because, you know, he was showing them quite the cheek.
Yeah.
In trying to rip him off.
There's so much great symbolism in this show.
Yeah, poetic justice. It's beautiful.
And they wander through these holes and Joel gets like leapt on by Ellie with a knife here. He immediately is able to easily throw her to the ground.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And Tess is like... she's got a knife. And then just kind of quickly remembers that she's meant to be playing an American character goes back into the accent.
And kind of does a good accent.
But you would have only caught it if you were Australian like we are.
That's true.
Oh, fucking cunt. Jesus, she fucking came out of nowhere. I mean, who the hell is that?
That's what she says. Who the hell is that?
And there's like kind of a tense standoff here between Marlene and the second in command woman over there. Ellie's like thrown on the floor. Joel and Tess are pointing their guns at Marlene. Tess and Marlene clearly know each other.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yep.
They immediately like, what are you doing here? I could say the same of you.
Mm.
And Joel points his gun at Ellie being like, what the fuck's happening here? And immediately Marlene is like, don't point it at her.
Yeah.
Point it at me. Leave it off. Don't fucking put her in danger.
Right. Even as if it was an accident, you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've been shot up. They're injured.
Is it? It's just that Robert's little gang and the Fireflies have had a shootout, right?
Yeah. Marlene says like he wouldn't take fuck you for an answer or something like that.
Yeah.
This deal has gone south. They've refused to pay. Guns have come out.
And then they also say like, oh, you know, Fedra in nearby. So I assume maybe like they've heard the gunshots or something.
That's what they say. Yeah, they say they'd have definitely heard this. They'll be on their way. They'll be here in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So clearly the plan has gone wrong.
Right.
The Fireflies' plan here.
Yes.
And
how many of them must have been shot then?
Well, that we know they've lost... we see some bodies in the hallway. There's only like 3 or 4 people sort of dead in the hallway.
Yeah.
But most of the Fireflies aren't in this building because they're all doing those like diversion things.
Right, yeah, true.
Or at the place where they're going to leave from. So it makes sense that there's not too many people around.
Yep.
But Marlene quickly is like, look, things have obviously gotten fucked up here. We've got this girl though. We will give you the car you want.
Mm.
We'll give you a fucking every supply that you need. We'll give you everything you want if you, because you've been fucked here now, take her to the place where we need to get her to, smuggle this kid for us. We'll give you everything you need.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's Fireflies at like the state building or something, they say, right?
Yeah, wherever it was. I can't remember, but wherever they needed to take her.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Joel and Tess have a quick talk about it and they're like, Fireflies tend to steal a bunch of Fedra stuff. We'll get like good shit if we do this.
Yeah.
I guess it'll work. Let's do it.
Yeah.
And so they agree to take this girl who they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know what it's about. Smuggle her to this area. And so they wait until like nightfall.
Mm-hmm.
And Joel and Ellie are in Joel's house together. And I really like the like quick looks and the dynamic that these two have already.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, Ellie is super similar to Sarah.
Yeah, yeah.
In a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Where, like, she's snappy and like...
clever,
know,
and...
getting
yeah.
one up on Joel and, like, clearly smart and, like... So, she comes into this room and is looking around for, like, 2 seconds, finds this, like, book of songs with, like,
the
a little code on it.
Hottest, like... 100 all the number one songs.
Yeah.
Is able to figure out like, oh, this is clearly code.
Right.
And I think it just said BNF and she's like, who are Bill and Frank?
Yeah.
Which I don't know if that was written down somewhere else or something. Yeah. But she's snooping around. Like, this kid is a bit of a shit.
Yes.
Because she's calling everyone a motherfucker. She swore at the rain that fell on her earlier.
That's right.
And is like real mouthy.
Yes.
A real, like, the sort of kid who, if had a been alive in my life in 2003,
yes,
would have gotten yelled at a bunch. By her parents. But so they like try to waste a bit of time there. Joel has a bit of a nap and Ellie is like, are you talking in your sleep? I reckon he said some fucking shit about, you know, some that she's gonna throw back at him later. Like, who's my pillows made of chocolate? Yum, yum, yum. And I woke up and my pillow was gone. But so
To point out also with the code, she explains what it is. It's like 60s songs is like, you know, one thing, one code. It's like
we want come stuff. In,
there's new
we
stuff.
We need stuff.
Right.
80s has a big red cross. What does that mean?
Yeah.
And so when he wakes up, she's like, by the way, the radio turned on while you were out. And some song that was like, wake me up before you go-go came on. And he like starts freaking out. She's like, ha. All right, so 80s means something bad's happened. I figured out your code, motherfucker.
Yep.
Smart.
Yeah.
Clever kid.
Yeah.
Not clever enough, though, to not immediately stand up when they leave the walls in 20 seconds.
Yeah.
Because she's a kid. This is a kid. They've got to smuggle this kid. It's late enough that they're like, okay, it's time to go. And they sneak through the walls. Not Oscar the Grouch. He doesn't live in a sewer. There's like some...
Splinter?
I guess that's Mutant Ninja Turtles style.
Yeah.
And Ellie's the teenage one.
Mm-hmm.
They sneak outside of the walls.
She's kind of a mutant as well, if you ask me. She's
cool but rude.
Now, Ben, come on.
Sneaking through the outskirts of this facility. They're making their escape. Quite tense. It's nighttime. There's people looking around. Joel had gotten warning from this guy that he does the drug deals with that, like, hey, stay inside the next few nights. There's going to be a bunch of shit happening.
Yeah.
Like,
we're going to be shooting everyone we see, basically.
Exactly. Like, it's not a good time to be found by us.
Yeah.
And what happens
there
if
he
not
is.
Getting found by them?
Yeah.
He's having a big old slash on the side of the wall.
Yeah. It's specifically that guy sees them. And immediately Joel is like, okay, let's make a bargain.
Right.
And Tess as well. Like, let's try and figure this out. And he's like mad at them. He's telling them, I told you not to come out here. What the fuck are you doing? I don't think you can buy your way out of this.
Right. Usually you get hanged for this. Like, this is much more serious than just, buying joints and selling opioids.
And Tess is like sort of going along with it, thinking, hey, we'll be able to talk our way out of this at some point. We'll have something we can give him.
He's like, what about he's on half the off? You know, all the stuff in the future. And he's like, what about all off?
Yeah, we'll
give
you everything.
Which is so cool.
I want 50 joints.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wait, no, he had the joint. I want 100 pills.
Yeah.
And he starts doing the little green box test.
Yep.
Taking their blood, which immediately when Ellie sees this thing come out, she's like, oh, shit, fuck. Yeah. Freaks out. Whips out her little flip knife that Marlene had given her and whacks it into the guy's leg.
Yeah.
Which I reckon I wouldn't have even flinched at if I were him.
No.
I'd have taken it and then my leg would have gotten stronger.
My
if anything.
Leg is so strong on the outside, it just would have like glanced off the side.
Yeah.
We're like,
I would have seen it happening so quickly that I would have dodged out of the way. She would have stabbed into the dirt and I would have been like, what did the dirt ever do to you? And I had like a cool line.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. Like a very cool line.
Who do you think you are, Dirty Harry?
Yeah.
Guys, that's really cool because if that happened to me, I'd be in a lot of pain. I think that's really cool that you guys know that you'd react that way.
Loser!
Well, you're similar to this bloke, Dan.
Yeah.
But yeah, he gets stabbed in the leg and like jumps back and is pretty much fine, but like they all kind of stand up and he's like, all right, well, you fucked it.
Yeah, there's no more deal now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got my gun pointed at you, which they really fucking spell out here.
Mm-hmm.
Reminds Joel of that time he had a gun pointed at him when his daughter died.
Yeah.
Yes. Which I don't think they needed to have that specific flashback.
Not in the same episode, right?
Pretty
like
weird.
We remember that.
Yeah.
It just happened before.
That was one bit where I was like, oh, that's a bit clumsy. We get it.
I agree.
But that happens, which, you know, he realizes, well, I'm not going to let this fucking happen again.
Yeah.
Leaps on the guy and pulverizes him.
Yeah.
Goes full beast mode.
He does.
Oh. That's him transforming into beast mode.
Right, yeah. right. I get it.
Punches this man's face in.
Yeah.
A lot. Heaps.
To death, it seems.
It does seem that way, yeah.
He's not well.
Yeah.
And
neither is Joel.
No.
Neither are a lot of people in this world.
Well, very neither true. It seems that's is fucking Ellie.
Yeah.
Tess finds this machine. It's red now. Ellie's like, no. I'm not. I'm okay. This is from 3 weeks ago. And she shows this like scar on her arm.
Yep.
She's like, I've had it for 3 weeks. I'm okay. There's nothing wrong. I know it came up red, but seriously, I'm okay. And they kind of have to quickly move, but like they look freaked out by it. Joel grabs the machine gun and they walk off into some collapsed buildings.
Yes.
Here in Boston.
Yes.
And that's episode one.
And a little radio.
Yeah.
We see the radio, Joel's.
That's true.
A song from Will Blow Me Down, the decade between 1980 and 1989.
Actually, which... 81 to 90 is technically when a decade happens.
Christ.
So if a song from 1980 play, you'd be like, oh, good, it's the 70s.
Well, hey, speaking of trouble, you're in it.
Yeah.
If you don't shut up.
Yeah, we've got, I didn't know the song, but it sounded very
80s. Yeah, that's, the, I mean, that's.
Was it like New Order or something?
Something
like,
yeah, you're right. It's very like, clearly like, hey, people need to know that this is a song from the 80s without knowing specifically which year it came out in.
Right.
Yeah, say no more.
They've got that synth going.
Yeah.
And you're right. So it means something bad and they've wandered off into the wilderness now into like a biological hazard area. There's like a fence with that.
Great.
Which like that must have been a biological hazard area before the outbreak if there's this fence outside with this sign on it.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, and then just some other medical supply spill.
So Boston then?
And then big pan up, big kind of city skyline.
I loved that.
Big building collapsed onto the side of the other one.
Looks I really so liked cool. the use of like it's a stormy night here and they've got lightning flashing on Joel's face as he's punching. And while they're hiding, it lights them up sometimes. It looked great.
Yeah. It was a Depeche Mode song called Never Let Me Down Again from 1987.
Yeah, okay. Right.
Yeah.
That's smack bang in the middle. It doesn't matter how you define a decade in 87.
That's right. It's the year I was born.
Ain't no one saying that it goes from 76 to 86.
No. And if they are, we should not be listening to them.
Great episode. Unfortunately, not a single clicker in it, so we are going to be unable to upload this episode.
Yes.
And we'll catch
so
you next
far,
week.
We barely know her.
That's
we
true.
Haven't been
that's
introduced.
True.
Wow, we got to the end of the episode at 1 hour, 20 minutes of recording the podcast.
That's
which
about
is
the length of the episode.
Almost exactly how long the episode was.
That's crazy.
So we've gotten at the end of this.
Yes.
Joel, daughter dead.
Daughter dead.
20 years later, here's this girl. He's got to smuggle. She's sick, but not sick.
Yeah.
And the way that everyone's treating her like, damn, she's the most important thing in the world. Then she comes up red. She's got the scar on her arm. Clearly, they're like, we got to this.
This is interesting.
Yeah.
This
girl
is important.
Ain't gone zombie.
Yeah. Yeah. Strap it or 5G tower.
Yeah. Get her to fucking... whatever, one of them. I'm glad that I've forgotten what the companies who made those.
Yeah, that's nice, isn't it?
Pfizer.
Damn it.
Moderna.
I barely know her.
AstraZeneca.
I barely know her.
Yeah. Well, they all work.
They all are. Okay. Come on. Interesting. Now that's the true conspiracy. Yeah.
No, I've met her 4 times so far.
Yeah.
Loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Beautifully shot.
We've been talking about this on the video games podcast for a little while from when it was announced and then we've, you know, reacted to various teaser trailers and stuff. I think we were all maybe, because of the general quality of video game adaptations, we were all a little skeptical about this needing to exist because the games are so story-driven up until kind of recently. But it is nice to now finally be watching it because it feels like it's been sort of on our radar for such a long time.
Yeah.
And it just be a great show in its own right.
Yeah.
Totally. I think that, like, I wasn't a massive fan of Chernobyl.
Right, right.
Both the incident and the show.
Okay.
I found both of them to be slightly poorly paced.
And I'm the opposite.
And that's the thing.
In both cases.
The pacing that I found a bit of a drag in Chernobyl is really working for me here.
Right.
Because a similarly dreary and upsetting subject matter and setting, but the way that they're hanging on everything in this and letting everything sort of... for as much as we said there were a couple of bits where it maybe zipped by, and if people are saying from reviews and stuff that like the world building was speedy, I'm finding that I'm liking how much time we're spending with the camera in a corner of a room looking at dingy wallpaper and showing us this place sucks. Here's what's happening.
Yeah.
I'm really enjoying the mood of it. The acting is fucking fantastic.
Yeah, pretty flawless across the board, I reckon.
I'm glad that they were, I guess, because this is on HBO Max, I believe, not airing on.
Is it just on Max?
I have a feel. Well, in any case,
it's 9 p.m. Sundays in the U.S. Yeah. Or, well, whichever U.S. time that
sure.
is.
Sure. Well, yeah. I guess either way, them having the license to make an episode that's a bit longer than your standard hour of this needed to be, this was very serviced by being an hour and 20 minutes.
Yes.
Like, had they had to keep it to 55 or whatever, I think it may have suffered a little bit. That extra like half an hour or so really helped.
And you need that intro. Like the bit in 2003.
Yeah.
You need to spend enough time in the modern day to know why we care about being here in the modern day. And they've set it up completely adequately, you know, like that. And I mean that positively. Adequate is often like, it'll do.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, they've done enough to be like, damn, I know where I am. I know who these people are. I want to know more about them. And I'm interested in this instigating thing that seems to be what's happening.
Yeah.
Right. Where's Tommy? What's this bite about?
Yeah.
Those are the two.
That's it. And will they get to their destination? Will they fulfill their quest? It's a classic setup.
I love a quest. A hero's journey.
It is. Or is it?
Who knows?
We'll find out. No.
Yeah, we got 8 more episodes left. Thank you very much. Do we have any more like thoughts before we want to go into like the sort of for people who've played the game section?
I mean, it's all positive, honestly. Like, script is super tight. Again, visually it's fantastic. Performances across the board were good. Love the ending. Like, there is a level of cinematic, you know, panache to it. It's not just, you know, docudrama style Chernobyl, like super gritty. There's a bit of art to it, or a lot of art to it.
I think that's maybe a change from Chernobyl that's like hitting harder for me with this too, where like this is trying to be real and grounded and everything, but is about this massive thing.
Right.
Like, it's trying to be big at the same time, whereas,
it probably would have been a little bit disrespectful to like zhuzh up the Chernobyl story a bit. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
I think this is going to be, this is going to catch on with a lot of people. Like,
the soundtrack is great too. Yeah. A lot of that is taken from, I assume it's the same composer, because it's like extremely similar to the games, which were great, and is sounding good underneath this. Like, that little guitar is like so fucking, it suits it so well. It's like this sparse, depressing, simple, wooden, creepy thing. It works super well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, do we want to get into our thoughts in regards to how it compares to the game?
Yes.
Thank you very much to anybody. So if you don't want spoilers, if this is your first time with this like story, and we haven't seen the rest of the episodes of the show, so we can't spoil show-specific things, but we will talk potentially about things that are from the game that this is an adaptation of. So if you're just watching the show, now's the time to head off. We're going to do like a sealed section, we call it, with full ability to spoil this game and the next one with this story. So thank you very much for listening.
Yeah. If you liked it, chuck us a review on the platform you use. You can rate it on Spotify review it on Apple.
Tell your friends if they're watching it.
Yeah.
Maybe have a little watch-along, have a little book club here.
Yeah.
But thank you if you've found us for the first time as well. We do other podcasts. Arya Talking to Me is a Game of Thrones one.
Yes.
Filthy Casuals is about video games.
That's right.
And we also do one called Hollywood Phonies, riff out the entire plots to fake movies from TV shows and films. And blow me down, there's one of them in this.
Yeah. I think that DVD was like a fake movie that are in the games too.
But we can
can talk more about that sort of thing when we transition to the sealed section. So again, if you're just watching the show, dip out now. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week. If you've already played the games and you want to hear more about our thoughts with potential story spoilers for the rest of those games, this is your warning. I've left it for so long.
Yeah. Whip out the scissors and cut open the little perforated line on the dolly sealed section.
Yeah.
It's about to get rude.
Do we have enough or too much pubic hair? It's the sealed section here.
Yeah. Seven tips.
Full spoilers.
Seven tips to drive your clicker wild.
Full spoilers.
How to give the perfect blowjob to Joel from The Last of Us. Brackets PS3.
Don't mention his watch. And also in this section, it's worth pointing out to people who are still with us, we won't necessarily talk too much about the game stuff, or like we're not going to go, oh, where do we think this is going, because this is clearly following it as an adaptation quite closely.
Yeah.
It's not so much prediction-y sort of things. It's just like things we've noticed or like enjoyed, both in comparison to the games or that are nods to the games or whatever, which one of which I really liked. There was a fair bit of like that sort of symbolism-y kind of forward, what do you fucking call that?
Foreshadowing.
Yes. God damn.
Yeah.
Stuff that I really liked how Sarah's first words to Joel, this maybe isn't a spoiler thing, but were alarm.
Oh yeah.
Just like those kinds of, and so one of those to do with the games was Ellie sitting in front of that window. There was that butterfly.
Yes.
Like dangly fucking chandelier. Mm-hmm. What do you call a window chandelier? A hang guy.
Dream catcher?
It wasn't that. It was like a stained glass butterfly.
Yeah.
But that butterfly symbol becomes such a big thing in part two, the game.
Mm-hmm.
I liked her sitting in front of that and already having that ready to weave through.
Right.
If they won.
I think there was a lot of shots that were, like you were saying in the main bit, Nox, of like establishing atmosphere and tone and setting that were like, oh, that's a loading screen from the game, which I liked. You know, I liked that. You know, you see like the sort of like the dust in the air and the sunlight streaming through the windows.
Well, that car bit, that's kind of, you know, it all being in the film within the car.
Right.
That's literally that view that you have for that entire sequence in the game. And that would just be a good way of filming something regardless.
Yeah, works. Yeah. I for a minute there was like, is this going to be one fucking shot? We've like talked about it a bit because it's so impactful in the game that you get to sort of look around and see that whole sequence going. And it's filmed very much in real time. But yeah, I think staying inside of the cabin has the same effect.
Yeah, pretty much.
There was part of me being like, as much as I love the games, I'm like, man, I kind of wish I hadn't played the games to just like watch this show. Like anyone coming to this show fresh and not knowing what I presume the end of season one will end up being.
Yep.
Right, if it's following it closely, man, you're in for a good time.
Especially how much I feel like we knew about the story of this game before it came out, because the game's, 10 years old this year?
Mm.
And before playing it, I feel like we knew that Ellie was immune and that's why we're going with her and all that sort of stuff.
Right, right.
Just in, you know, interviews and pre-release stuff, and games are so heavily looked at before they come out.
Yep.
And I wonder how surprising that is to someone who's not, who didn't know that's the reason that she's in this.
Right.
Who, like.
Well, like, you were saying in the main bit, like, not knowing that Joel's daughter dies. You know, that is so shocking.
When I played the fucking game, know it's not about her for the most of it, but that fucking sequence is really impactful.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I do miss the late title sequence being in this. I was surprised that they put it in between the 60s and 2003.
Right, yeah, think that, that was a good, but also by that point you'd be doing it almost halfway through the episode.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, true.
I love that shit. True. And like, it's just such a good point to like, A, let people catch their breath.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to bring that theme in and everything. I thought I wouldn't have put it where it was in this.
Yeah, yeah, I think I
agree.
Drive
My Car style.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's gone.
The thought you had?
I was thinking before, we were talking about sort of the length of the episode, the pacing and stuff. I think it could have been cool to just end the first episode at the end of 2003. Because that would have been like, they would have maybe had to add 10 minutes of, it's a long episode to start the show.
True.
With.
I do think that it doesn't give you, it doesn't give you that drive of like, well, what's the rest about and what's the story about? Like, I think you've got to have the basically two episodes that we watched happen in the one spot, or else you've got a self-contained story kind of that ends on such a damn note.
It is a damn note.
Like, do you want to come back to it necessarily?
And also, if you're coming to this from the games, you know, you do. I can understand that being incredibly frustrating if it's just out at the end of 2003, because it's like you want to see you want to see the actual world that you spend the majority of the time in the game.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to say before. I really want to try and get my partner to watch this. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's harder now that we're doing this because we would have watched it together. But yeah, I'd be interested to get her read on. Like, I kind of want
to have that
try and have a, watch it, I don't know, just like at some point during the week, week to week, because I think she would enjoy it. But yeah, just kind of quizzing her on the beat, those two specifically beats in this episode of Sarah dying and then the bite and being like, how'd that read to you? Did you think you were going to be spending this whole show just in 2003 in the initial aftermath? Because again, like with the trailer for it, as a lot of trailers do tend to be now, it doesn't really spell out what the show is. It's like a lot of kind of random little vignette cutaways. There's no like voiceover of like, you need to take this girl across country because she could be the cure. So
and it's mostly a tone piece, right? Of like post-apocalypse, big explosion, scary running zombie. Like
That's true. You see more zombies in the trailer than in that episode, really.
And we get like two who we interact with in that episode, right? Really?
Yeah.
Of like the and two they're not, running at John.
Yeah, they're not full Sarah. On, you know, mushroom people.
No, yeah, right. We and it's good that they show that. I really liked the way, we were talking about this a little bit before we started recording, the way that they, as an adaptation from game to show, taking out all those game bits but leaving in enough of them walking through and the tension and having to hold a gun and be aware of the clickers to keep it tense. And like, they didn't show the big firefight. They didn't need to be involved in the firefight between like Marlene and Robert.
And Robert,
which you're very involved in the game, but managing to have that same effect, but without the more take every opportunity to have a shooting section.
Right.
I think that's being done really well as an adaptation.
Yeah, and from what I've read of the press about it, like the reviews of it.
You can still get pregnant from pre-press.
Oh my God, he's done it. That's something that keeps up across the whole series. Cool. I read a thing specifically that was like,
that's good.
You don't see a lot of action. It's kind of the show basks more in like the aftermath of these sort of awful things that have happened. Like, it's not a thing that's showing you. Just because it's top of my mind, just because I watched it so recently. Like, Game of Thrones is happily spending full hour and a half episodes at the end of just
combat.
Full on fighting. I get the impression that that's going to be really kept to a minimum in this, which again, for TV budget in general, like, it just does make a bit more sense to sort of like hold back on that.
And at least for this part of the story that they're going to cover in this first season, you're not so much worried about like, well, anyone could die at any time as Game of Thrones, where like having that combat stuff is tense because it's like, well, anyone could cop a sword potentially. And I don't think that's so much the thing here. But yeah, in the game, there's like three or four bits where the fight leads to a story beat. Where like, I mean, because we're allowed to spoil the game here, like the first time Ellie has to shoot someone, when Joel gets like knocked off of the thing and gets impaled.
Oh, yes.
The fight with the cannibal guy and like the, at the end, what happens at the end of the game? Oh, yeah, the hospital.
Right.
Yeah.
That fighting with the fireflies.
And
like
there's that group of like people who attack you when you're in the car and shit. Like there's
Or the hunters, or whatever they're called. Yeah.
But you're right. I don't think
I assume they'll do, they'll do a few set pieces, right?
Yes.
It won't be heaps of running around shooting people. It'll be, and like, fuck, they went all out with the, you know, the premiere, like the plane crashes and stuff like that. Was the scope was, you know, huge.
And you can kind of have one of each, right? Where it's like the one in this is like world ending. You can have one where it's like zombies coming at you. You can have one where it's like a clicker, we've got to be quiet.
Right.
You can have one where it's like, people are the real monsters. Here's these enemies.
Yep.
You know what I mean? If you do one of each throughout this thing, any more than that is going to be repetitive potentially.
Right.
It's crazy to me still thinking about like this show already, like the critical response is great. It seems like
you've just done it.
It seems like it'll catch on with audiences and just like, I wonder if they're thinking about what they do for a season two, if they do one, if they do just go, because it's like, man, if people are like super into the show, it's a fucking crazy move to pull on them for a season two of a TV show. Where it it set you up, and that kind of is a good example of what we're talking about, where that kind of twist that happens early in the start of two, that exists. And the way that the game pivots halfway through, that exists mostly for a gameplay thing. Like, mm-hmm. it, you know, it exists for you to play the game, but like, would it work the same way in a I don't know.
I think it's structure it. I think it would get a similar response to some of the more negative responses that happened to part two, where it's so harrowing that people don't like it.
Yeah. Right.
But I think that even could potentially work better in a TV show because you're more focused on the story. And so that reset gameplay-wise doesn't have to feel as much of a step back for you.
Yeah, and I think you're probably more able to transfer your investment from one character to the next in a show because you haven't been like, you know, what's the word? Like, you haven't felt immersed in that character as much because it's more passive.
And I think if they were structuring it the same way with the flashbacks in the way that, I think I've said this already, but initially I didn't love about The Last of Us Part 2 where it was kind of flipping back and forth all the time between like the present stuff and then the Ellie growing up kind of stuff. That was the bit that got me a little.
Yep.
Not so much the Abby bit, but like that bit. But in a show, I think that stuff works a little better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you pepper that through. So I could see a season 2 taking basically the same structure as The Last of Us Part 2 working really well. But then the age differences of the characters becomes a question that you've got to answer because like Bella Ramsey looks young.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if they're doing that in a year's time, she's not going to look like the 20-whatever-year-old Ellie that you get or 19 or whatever she is in the later setting of Last of Us Part 2.
It would be a shame, I think, because Pedro Pascal, they just have to give him a few more grey hairs.
Exactly, yeah, he's fine.
It would be a shame if they had to recast Ellie. Or we've speculated about this, I think, just off air, like, they fill in that gap between the games.
Yeah.
Possibly.
Well, because they'd potentially then, I mean, maybe we're getting ahead of ourselves, but then, like, there's talk that there'll be a Last of Us 3 game, but not for a while.
Yeah.
And so they would be up to doing a third season, I think still well before they would be up to releasing the game.
Probably.
So maybe it does serve them better to spend a bit more time with just Ellie and Joel for a couple of seasons. Because in a show, if that's what people like, that dynamic, that doesn't really make sense to me to just abandon that one of season two.
Surely they would
want to like cling to that for a bit longer.
But that's part of why that story hits, is like not being precious about that, you know? Like,
true.
It would be pretty radical for a TV show to do that in their second season. Yeah.
Very HBO style. It's different to Game of Thrones, how that takes twice in the first two or three seasons, like the default protagonist character and fucks them off.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'd be keen to see that, but I don't know how the time difference sort of stuff would work.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Also having the way that this is adapted well, there's two things about it. Like having Druckmann in particular be an executive producer on this, clearly huge hand in it, everything's following it well and the changes are good changes.
Right, yeah.
I loved seeing a bit more Ellie like at the start because in the game, she is just, she's just handed over to you, right?
Yeah,
like,
I think so.
All this stuff of her chained to the radiator. It's not heaps, but I loved getting those little bits there.
Small bits and like following, like seeing Tess be confronted by Robert, which you hear her tell you about.
Yeah, yeah,
but
true.
But then you don't see that in the first one. In the game.
Yeah.
So it's really good as an adaptation, but then also it turns out just if you've got a good story, it works in different mediums.
Yeah.
And I think one of the reasons that this is like one of the best video game adaptations is because it's one of the six good video game stories.
Yeah.
So like no wonder it's better than fucking, you know, Sonic or Uncharted.
Yep.
Because even the Uncharted stories, as fun as those games are, they're not as good stories at all.
Yeah.
No,
they're fun
yeah.
characters to do action with, but like, yeah, this is, it's properly fucking working. It's
great. Yeah. I'm all right. Pumped.
We've gone longer than the episode now.
Okay.
Officially.
<That's fine.
laughs> And we got a lot more to do after this. So, yeah. Thanks, guys. Thanks for listening.
Thank you very much. Do we have an email address?
Yeah. I had to set one up for the link tree. It's I believe it's just clickeribarelyknowher@gmail.com.
Cool.
Can't believe it wasn't taken.
We should have said that before the other bit, too.
Yeah. Whatever. I'll chuck it in the description as well.
Okay,
but,
cool.
Yes. So, yeah, you can get at us there. I think I made an Instagram account for it as well. But, email's probably best, and you know, be clear about whether you're spoiling anything game wise, but we would love to hear from people and hear your thoughts on the episode so far.
We'll try and get these up as quick as we can after the episodes, but it's obviously an awkward time in Australia to do stuff, and so it might be up after people have gone to bed and stuff in the US and whatever. We'll do our best with that sort of thing. But, you know, going forward, just to let people know.
Yeah, yeah. If you are in the US or the UK, have a little listen on your way to work on Tuesday, Monday.
It'll still be a good show tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to the rest of these. Thanks for listening, everyone.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
This Mother's Day, treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their advanced eye care duo brightens and firms skin around your eyes, while the Golden Glow Body Trio nourishes and smooths skin all over. Go to OSEAMalibu.com and use code MOM for 10% off your first order site-wide.